This season, let your shoes do the talking. Designer Shoe Warehouse is packed with fresh styles that speak to your whole vibe without saying a word. From cool sneakers that look good with everything to easy sandals you'll want to wear on repeat, DSW has you covered. Find a shoe for every you from the brands you love, like Birkenstock, Nike, Adidas, New Balance, and more. Head to your DSW store or visit DSW.com today.
Going up. Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. And you get a free Samsung 5G phone when you bring your number. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
Question for our listeners. Which automaker assembles the most vehicles in the country? Here's a hint. It's the same one that employs the most hourly workers in the country, and the answer is Ford. That's not a coincidence. It's a commitment. A commitment your local Ford stores share. And that is why Ford is now offering employee pricing across their full lineup of vehicles, which means you pay what they pay. So visit your local Ford stores today to take advantage of this great opportunity. Ford Motor Company. From America, for America.
In Indiana, summer means more than sunshine. It's hiking miles and miles of trails to magnificent views and cruising through caves on underground river rides. It's spending the night in a floating cabin and scuba diving into your next big adventure. It's riding a horse and buggy through historic towns and camping with elephants at a wildlife park. It's anything but ordinary. Plan your trip at inindiana.com/summer.
Now, from Wichita's most listened to sports radio, 97.5 and 1240 KFH, this is Sports Daily with Jacob Albrock and Tommy Gester.
All right, welcome in, everybody. Happy Tuesday to you, sports fans. The Royals get a big hit last night. Did anybody else stay up late? A little tired this morning. Waiting for the big hit. Finally, it did come late in the game, but it meant we all stayed up real late to watch them get it. So I'm one of them. I'm a little sleepy here this morning, Tommy Caster. Max Powers also in. Thanks for tuning in on KFH today. We're glad to have you. This should be a fun show. We've got Paul Mills coming up, I believe, next segment. That should be the plan. He's going to talk about that incoming class with us. So we're looking forward to that. Felix Johnson also stopping by. Our Chiefs insider will get his takes on anything with the Chiefs. It's kind of slow, but we'll look around the NFL as well. Still no Aaron Rodgers news, by the way. So we'll get with some NFL news with Felix Johnson. Have some fun there. We will get you ready for the rest of this Royals series. We've got all kinds of good stuff. NBA playoffs, NHL playoffs get back underway tonight. Tommy, good morning. How are you?
I'm good. It's a quick turnaround in the NBA. The Thunder back in action tonight after that Sunday Game 7 win against Denver. They're back at home against the Minnesota Timberwolves for Game 1 of that series. So that's going to be a juggernaut matchup between those two teams. And that one, of course, Knicks Pacers, that rivalry renewed. We've got some pretty good matchups here in the NBA playoffs.
Should be good. Should be fun. We're looking forward to it. We are glad it's here. And it should be, it should be a fun show. And we've got Shocker Baseball today. It should be a great show there as well with the Shocker Baseball team. And hopefully they can continue this momentum that they have garnered late in the season, much like they did last year. And who knows, maybe they can do something special in the conference tournament. I think we're going to be in for a good show today, Tommy. Shocker fans, get ready. This will be our introduction to a lot of these new players, and there are a lot of new players this year for Shocker basketball. And we will ask Coach Mills about those players and, you know, see what he thinks. Did you stay up late with the Royals last night, Tommy?
I did not. I stayed up as long as I could.
Yeah, I don't blame you.
I couldn't get the entire way through. I will say, though, I think we've got receipts, and I don't think we've got it ready to go, but I distinctly remember yesterday on the show saying, I wouldn't be surprised if it's a 0-0 game through seven innings, and that's exactly what we had last night. You know, Bubich pitched another gem, and it was late game offense for Kansas City, and they were able to get it done.
They got it done. And that's the way it's going to have to get done for a while here, it would appear, right? This is the way that they're going to play. And I don't know what else, Tommy, to say. You know, we talk about it all the time, but it's, you know, nothing is going to change immediately. This is the style that they play. It just is. And I don't know what's going to change, but they're going to have to win games like this against good teams often enough to stay in it until they can get some help in the lineup. We can't just keep waiting for the lineup to change at this point. Hopefully it will, but I don't know how you can plan for that. Vinny Pasquantino delivered the big hit last night. That was great to see. You know, 2-for-4. He had a really nice game. Brought that batting average all the way up to .228, Tommy. Like, he's got a long way to go, but that's progress, and that's what we want to see. Salvi, well, he continues to struggle right now. And I don't know. It's an elephant in the room of sorts. He's the captain. He's all these things. He just doesn't look good at all at the plate. It's not like he's hitting the ball hard or anything. He just doesn't look very good. And so they've got him locked in, though, to that 4 spot, and they need him badly, and hopefully he can work through it. Garcia had a couple more hits. Canna had a couple more hits. So it was a weird game, too, because they did – how many hits did they have? 10 hits in the game. There was a point before Vinny's hit where they were getting to some degree, Robbie Ray, who was very good, but he'd given up 6 hits. He was like, the Royals were making some noise, but they just couldn't get anything across. Bubich was fantastic. No hitting them through. What did he get through on like 5 1/3? And then there was like an infield single on a fluke play where Massey slipped on the outfield grass, trying to retrieve long foul ball, whatever it was. But they got a little bit of trouble there in the 8th inning with the bullpen, but they got through it. And Estevez was good again, and that's good. That's kind of the formula. They're going to have to get really good starting pitching. You're going to have to hope for maybe 3 runs. You're going to have to hope for that, which is totally unfair to the pitching staff to say, hey, you got to hold them under 3 every game. But that's kind of the way it is when they're going to win these games.
It's the way that it is, and the pitching staff has accepted that challenge, and they basically have the entire year. I mean, you know, there have been outliers where they haven't been able to hold their opponents down. But by and large, I think that the pitching staff recognizes the challenge. I think they know that this offense is not going to put up a bunch of runs game in and game out. So it's really going to be up to them to be able to hold their opponents down. And that's what Bubich did last night for sure. He was incredible. I think what also makes the whole middle of the lineup dilemma even more difficult is you look at the bottom of the lineup, and Michael Massey was 0-for-4 and Hunter Renfroe was 0-for-3. Hunter Renfroe is unplayable. And I understand that they don't have a whole lot of other options there. It's not like they've got a bunch of depth, but I mean, Renfroe's batting a measly .173. His OPS is under 5. And I know that he's in the 8th spot right now in the lineup. He shouldn't be in the lineup at all. He shouldn't be on the roster at all. Michael Massey should probably take a seat until he can get things worked out and figured out. You know, so we spend a lot of time, and rightfully so, on the middle of the lineup and what's ailing Salvi and what's going on with Vinny. Of course, Vinny had a good game last night and everything, but because of that, you know, all the attention on those couple of guys, there's not quite as much attention on the fact that you've got automatic outs at the bottom of your lineup. And we've been seeing that for some time now.
Yeah. And you know, the middle gets the focus to some degree because it's driving in runs that has been such a challenge. It's so weird, right? Because Jonathan India is right where you thought he'd be when he came over, right? Bobby Witt Jr.'s fine. His power has been a little lacking, but he's still productive. Michael Garcia is having one of the great, you know, breakout seasons in baseball right now. Canna's been a good hitter. Isbell's been a good hitter. I mean, you're looking at 5, 6 guys there, 7 maybe, that have been productive. It's just not leading to any runs at all. And so that's where, to me, that's why I keep looking at the middle. Like, that's their job, is to do that. That, you know, these other guys, like, it's not, I'm not going to sit here and say, oh boy, Kyle Isbell needs to be driving in more runs.
No, right? Not at all. But when Hunter Renfroe is 0-4 and his OPS is 450 or whatever it is, you can't continue to trot him out there.
Because what are you providing at that point? It's not like this, you know, tremendous defense. It's not like when Michael A. Taylor was in the lineup, right? Like, it's not like there's just, I get it. They paid him a lot, you know, relatively speaking, a lot of money to be there, but I'm with you. Like, what are we doing here? Like, we've seen it now for 2 years. It's not just a year. It's 2 years we've seen this. So we'll get more into the Royals as we make our way through this morning. Not to worry. We have some giveaways that we'll get to today. All kinds of good stuff. Thanks to Prairie Fire Coffee for the tune-up this morning, because it was a late night watching the Royals, and we're glad to have that. Paul Mills, we expect to be in next segment. We'll try to work on that connection here and have that for you, Shocker fans. We'll ask him about the new players, the class as a whole, what it has been like out there in the portal for the Shockers this offseason. Portal Paul in next on Sports Daily.
At Designer Shoe Warehouse, we believe that shoes are an important part of, well,
everything. From first steps to first dates, from all-nighters to all-time personal bests.
From building pillow forts to building a life.
For all the big and small moments that make up your whole world, DSW is there. And we've got just the shoes. Find a shoe for every you from brands you love at brag-worthy prices at your DSW store or DSW.com.
Going up. Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. And you get a free Samsung 5G phone when you bring your number. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
Question for our listeners. Which automaker assembles the most vehicles in the country? Here's a hint. It's the same one that employs the most hourly workers in the country, and the answer is Ford. That's not a coincidence. It's a commitment. A commitment your local Ford stores share. And that is why Ford is now offering employee pricing across their full lineup of vehicles, which means you pay what they pay. So visit your local Ford stores today to take advantage of this great opportunity. Ford Motor Company. From America for America.
In Indiana, summer means more than sunshine. It's hiking miles and miles of trails to magnificent views and cruising through caves on underground river rides. It's spending the night in a floating cabin and scuba diving into your next big adventure. It's riding a horse and buggy through historic towns and camping with elephants at a wildlife park. It's anything but ordinary. Plan your trip at inindiana.com/summer.
It's time to get back to the sports talk.
All right, let's do this thing. Go!
Sports Daily is on KFH. And now, digging deeper with the teams you follow, it's another Sports Daily Insider interview on KFH.
And we have Wichita State head coach Paul Mills with us here on Sports Daily, joining Jacob Albrock, Tommy Caster. Coach, Have you caught up on any sleep yet? I've been telling you, this portal season, and we appreciate so greatly the Portal Paul moniker that you gave yourself right there at the end of the season. But I cannot imagine, like, I don't want to say, has it been fun? It can't be fun, but how has it been in this wildest season yet of the transfer portal?
Well, I've been called worse than Portal Paul, so that one doesn't impact me much. It's definitely different. I mean, there's a part of me that feels really bad for fans and people who follow basketball simply because you're like, who are these new guys? I don't know any of these people. And you don't have there isn't this, you know, hey, I previously knew Ron Baker. I previously knew Fred. And you just don't get that level of connection between fans and players anymore. Unfortunately, I think it's one of the realities of moving forward. But at the same time, I do think that it's probably easier to assemble a team, given that a lot of schools have resources for rosters, especially now that revenue sharing is on the brink of actually happening. So all of that being said, there's a part of me that enjoys it, but then there's the same part of me that's like, man, I enjoy having a group of guys that are back and are familiar with terminology and understand what's being taught. So I have mixed emotions about it.
When you talk about that familiarity, Coach, I know that it's hard with intangibles when you're bringing in new players to know, especially like, how is their chemistry? How will they work with one another? I mean, that's a kind of a complete unknown. At least on paper, you know a lot about, you know, these individual players that you're bringing in. But how important is that from day one, once this class is in place, to try to start to build that familiarity?
It's 100% accurate. I mean, you have to find yourself in, like, I know who you are. I have some idea about who you are as a player. You go through and you try to see where their game has been upgraded based upon what happened in March versus, well, when they show up in June. Players are spending a lot of times right now working on their game, given that the fact that they don't have school, at least I should say, hopefully, they're spending a lot of time working on their game. But there are elements of, I don't know you as an individual. You know what? It's one thing for people to like basketball, but I don't know how much you love it. You know, I'm a little fanatical about this stuff, and I chose it as a profession. And there's a lot of players who, and I do this because I'm tall, or I do this because I'm fast, or, you know what, I was better than other people at this particular stage of life at this particular sport. But then it really gets amped up here. And so you kind of get some insight into just who they are. Because I let them know up front, especially during the recruiting process, that this is going to be difficult. This is going to be hard, and you need to understand it. And what is their level of taste for hard? You know, as they go through it, like, what is their appetite for really digging in deep? And that's one of the things we figure out at 8 a.m. workouts during the month of June.
It feels like head coach Paul Mills, Wichita State basketball with us on Sports Daily, that we saw the team last year really do a lot of that stuff, buy in as they kind of got through. You guys got through the first part of conference play, and then something clicked. Whenever we watch it, it felt like, man, this team's like, they're getting nasty. They're going to be great defensively. Then in this portal class, it kind of felt like you guys were emphasizing that a little bit. It is so hard to track and observe and like wonder what's going on, but it did feel like with some of these additions that you guys were really locked into a type of player that fit what helped you guys get on that heater last year. Is that the case? Were you out specifically looking for a specific kind of player there, or do you have to just sort of let the chips fall a little bit in this process?
No, I mean, I think you definitely orchestrate a roster that you feel is capable of winning and what you believe adds to winning. And so for us last year, I mean, we had a situation with Ronnie DeGray getting injured, and it was just really, really difficult to overcome. I think people who follow us and are familiar with basketball just understand his value. And so when he went out, we really had a tough time. especially defensively. But, you know, his value offensively is hidden. I don't know how many people remember the game at Florida Atlantic, but he was easily the best player on the floor. And he cared about both ends of the game, you know. The first call I actually made, we were at the conference tournament and, you know, a number of teams' seasons had ended. And I inquired once I saw that Caron Boyd, who was defensive player of the year in the Southern Conference, when I saw that he entered the portal, I was just like, man, 6'5", because most of your defensive players of the year are either bigs because they block shots, or they're littles because they generate a lot of steals and create havoc and pressure in the backcourt. But the fact that, you know, Caron was available, and that was definitely an emphasis. And then we wanted to address the shooting piece. You know, I thought we were solid defensively last year. We didn't come out of the gate very well, but, you know, once we changed some things, and specifically Ronnie DeGray getting back, we were really able to make strides there. All that being said, that we really struggled to make shots on the perimeter. I don't want to bore you with a whole bunch of numbers here, but we were the best team in the country at getting shots at the rim. 35% of our shots were at the rim. And we were actually top 15 in the country at generating open threes, right? People aren't just going to let you dunk the basketball. So they're going to prevent you. And so you need to be able to spray that out and have guys who can make shots. This group we have coming in, there's two things that stand out about them offensively. They're a 7% better shooting team. Last year's team at Wichita State, we shot 30% from three, which was near the bottom in the country. But this group collectively is at 37%. So that's a 7% jump. And then the assist to turnover ratio is also pretty high. It's nearly 2-1. So we just gathered stats, what these guys have done at the Division I level, and compared it to with last year's team. So defensively, we wanted to make sure we added somebody in Caron Boyd. Also feel we got a really good one in Will Berg from Purdue at 7'2". You're going to be a pretty good rim protector given that kind of size. And then we needed to address some turnover ball security issues as well as shooting.
I think on that note, Coach, you know, with Boyd not only being the conference defensive player of the year last year in the SoCon, but you get additional defensive help and length in a guy in Jarrett Valencia from Monmouth and what he brings to the table. It certainly, to me, in my limited knowledge, admittedly, it certainly seems like the not only the priority in defensive ability, but also in length as well. You've got a ton of length, and you mentioned Will Berg, a core four transferred in. So you've got height, you've got length, you've got the ability to guard at a variety of different positions. I would imagine that becomes a major identity focus point of this team.
Man, you know, if you were to walk into a film session, usually the first three things that we tell the team is we're going to rebound the ball, number one. We're going to take care of the ball, number two, and we're going to share the ball, number three. And rebounding, we were the best rebounding team in our conference last year. That needs to continue. I know it's a staple and it's a hallmark here of Wichita State teams at the past, but philosophically, it's also something that I really believe in. You know, it's not difficult. Every rebound that occurs in a basketball game is offensive. Whether you can extend a possession or whether you, hey, you know what, I got a rebound and now we're going to start offense because we were able to rebound the other team's glass. So all of that being said is we need to be good there. We need to be better there. I know we were number one in the league, but the truth is we need to be amongst the top in the country. And so that's definitely an emphasis. And I will tell you, you know, going back to your point, there are a number of pieces. You mentioned Jarrett Valencia, who's already on campus here. Like, I mean, there are people who can already add to our defensive ability. And I feel that we need to get upgraded. I find myself simple doesn't necessarily mean simplistic, but it is one of those things in the summer where we're basically practicing. I mean, we get 4 hours, so we spend Tuesdays, Thursdays, and two-hour practices. And then Monday, Wednesdays, Fridays, they're with the strength coach, but then they kind of play. We're not spending, I used to spend like an hour every day, so that way we saw them. you know, four times a week. It's changed. You have to get everybody on the same page. So we're looking forward to the implementation process that'll begin for us on June 2nd.
We are too. Everybody wants to meet these guys so badly. We can come back to some of the specific players, Coach. Paul Mills joining us, Wichita State head men's basketball coach. I want to know what it's like on the recruiting trail as the head coach of Wichita State in this new time that everybody's dealing with. Like, what does Wichita State carry out there for you when you're reaching out and contacting guys?
Well, I mean, the biggest thing that players want to do is they want to play, you know, and they want to know that they can get better. And so I think one of the things that you sell is, I know our staff has coached 44 NBA guys, and so we kind of know what it looks like. We've been around it. We've seen it. We've had the opportunity to be a part of NCAA tournament teams and you know, whether it was opportunities that we all experienced at other locations, but there's also a history here. And so we understand that there's a history here. There's a fan base here. So I think there's just so many things that you talk about through this process. I am a big believer that the better we can get the player, the better we can get the team. And so we spend a lot of time showing guys progress. I'll give you an example. If you're familiar with Ken Pomeroy, Ken Pomeroy ranks everybody in the conference. And Xavier Bell brought this up to me. But of the 93 players that were ranked in offensive efficiency his junior year, he was ranked 91. And I told him that, man, one, it's not good enough. But two, we are going to have to go out there and recruit. And I remember him thinking, he told me, he said, thank you for bringing that to me. And then this past year, he was a first-team all-league guy. And I remember when we presented to the team, Xavier Bell has been recognized as first-team all-conference. He said, Coach, what was I ranked last year? 91st. And it was just something that stuck in his head that entire time. But it is also something that you show recruits. Our players get better. This is not an opinion. This is a fact. Yeah. Quincy Ballard is the most improved player in the country during the past 2 years. If you go look at his offensive efficiency to where he started when we got here to where he was at the end, he was the most improved. And so we do a lot of that. We just show guys our track record of being able to help them. And then we show them that they can be in an environment where people genuinely care about the progress of the team. Us as coaches, we care about the progress of the player because the progress of the player can make the progress of the team. But fans here care about the progress of the team, and you're going to be in an environment-rich environment to aid your process.
I got to ask you about the staff coach. It was announced last week, PJ Cousinard joining your staff. I'm a Wichita guy. I followed him when he was in college, was a key part of that Sweet 16 run back in 2006. Now joining your staff, coming back home to Wichita, of course, his son also on the roster, Pierre, for you as well. What has that addition been like? I know it's been pretty early, but at least the importance of having PJ on your staff.
Yeah, I've actually followed PJ, just being a Houston guy. I followed PJ when he was in high school. And, you know, we played those guys in the Virgin Islands when he was a senior. It was Coach Marshall's first team here, and played those guys when I was at Baylor. And so I've been on the bench and watched him play here at Wichita State, but was really impressed with him as a high school player, and then have watched his career. I mean, we recruited a number of guys that he was around while I was at Baylor. I recruited and landed several players off of his teams when I was the head coach at Oral Roberts. And then he is, you know, very plugged in, and he's helped us since we've been here at Wichita State. And so it's one of those, you want people who are passionate about the game and assisting players and making sure that you're doing right by those. But you also want people who want to add a ton of value to Wichita State. He checks all those boxes. And then when you add in the fact that you have an alumnus who not only was on the team, but was really good and understands what this looks like when this place is going. I think those are all pluses, and PJ's a huge plus to our staff.
Man, fans are fired up about it too, Coach. I know that. Just seeing people's reaction to it. People were telling me I'm not from here. And he was one of the first players people told me about when I got here about 11 years ago is PJ Cousinard. So that's I know fans are fired up about that. And we're fired up that you've got your guys in and we can see them now as a team. I know you're making the rounds today. You're going to talk a lot about these players. We cannot wait for you to get them in the gym and to learn about what you're seeing from them actually on the court. Is the portal done? Are you guys full?
Yeah, I wouldn't say that.
Okay.
Yeah,
okay.
I think we've got room to be able to add players. We're just not out there. One, I think a lot of people are trying to, we've got, 9 more days until we officially know who's staying in the NBA draft, who isn't. But there are still players that we're pursuing. Okay. So it's, I think a lot of guys, you know, just to make sure fans don't misunderstand, there are some players out there that are asking for several million dollars. We're not chasing any of those guys. We do not have those resources. But at the same time, you are always searching for guys that you believe like that particular player has a chance. And if he can be with us and be in this environment for a year, we think he could grow. So I think there's a lot of those situations where you're looking for diamonds in the rough right now.
We love it. We love to see him grow. Good luck today with all your talks you're giving on these guys. We can't wait to see him in the gym. Coach, we'll do this again once you do have a chance to get him in the gym and work him out a little bit and get him in person. Thanks for being here. Boo Astros, go Rangers.
We got 2 of 3 last week.
I know. I saw. wasn't too happy about it. All right, Coach. Thank you for being
here.
Thank you,
Tommy. Thank you, guys.
Thanks, Coach.
There goes head coach Paul Mills, Wichita State men's basketball coach. It is a wild, wild era of college basketball. It is. And I think that, you know, as we settle the dust on it, Tommy, when it all started and we saw Quincy Ballard and Corey Washington, we didn't even have a chance to get into those guys, honestly. When we saw them leave, though, it was a little and then now that the class has come together, I like it. I like the way the pieces fit on paper, which is all we have anywhere.
That's all we have. That's all. Like. That's all Paul Mills has too. Until he can get him in the gym and working together. I think on paper, it looks really good.
Good stuff with Kevin Saul there.
Paul Mills,
appreciate his time. I know he's got some other stuff doing today. So I think
we had Paul. You know, we had Paul Mills on the show.
What did I say?
Kevin Saul. We have Kevin tomorrow.
I was just texting Kevin Saul to make sure he was coming on tomorrow. Thanks, Paul Mills and Kevin Saul for coming tomorrow to talk about everything else. But good stuff with Paul Mills there. If you missed any of it, go back and listen on the Odyssey app. I think the most topical thing there, Tommy, that we sort of backed into just a little bit is they're not necessarily done. Not necessarily done. It sounds like they're just not done. And like many teams, KU, and we'll talk to Shreyas Lada about this this week as well, kind of waiting for that draft process to end and let those players sort of come back into the mix. I think what's interesting about that is those are going to be highly coveted players, right? When that process happens, he point blank said, Wichita State's not going to be in the business of the players asking for millions and millions of dollars. I think we know that and we understand that now. Maybe someday, not right now. So who's out there that would be that? I think that's real interesting to me. Like who is still out there maybe in that process that isn't one of those players? And that becomes pretty interesting.
Well, my thought process is it's probably a trickle down effect. Like you've got the players that are in the draft that are going to remove themselves from the draft and then they become the top targets remaining in the portal. While there still are guys that are not in the NBA draft process right now that have not picked teams yet, they have not solidified their next team for next season. And they probably, you know, get knocked down the totem pole a little bit. And I would imagine those guys are probably the ones that, you know, Wichita State is keeping an eye on. I would be a little surprised if any of the, you know, new additions, if there is anybody new coming into Wichita State that hasn't already been announced, if it was a player that had been in the NBA draft process.
Yeah, I think you're right.
I think it would be somebody further down the line.
That part would be unlikely, but it could be somebody that's waiting on that decision to be made
right.
to know. And there's probably some honesty involved in some places with that where, you know, it could even be like high majors are like, we're going to need you to wait though. Like you got to wait if you want to. And so I'm sure that's happening and that will be very interesting to see. But even if it ended today, I like the mix of players. I like the mix of skill sets. He mentioned 7% better on paper shooting. We all know that that's been a problem for Wichita State for years and years and years, even before Paul Mills. And this is as good a collection of shooters coming in as has been assembled in the last, whatever you want to call it, in the last while. It's been a while. Like on paper, this is the best group of shooters, just skills that we'll see. Does it translate? We'll find out. And then, of course, the defensive guys he brought in that are just, it's very clear that they're defensive. I think it all could work together. I think it's a good mix of players. How does it stack up with the rest of the league? You know, I try to look at that stuff. I have no idea. Right now, if you go to like 24/7, it puts Wichita State as the 9th best transfer class. I don't know what to make. I don't know what that's based on. You know, like, I don't know where that comes from or how they're trying to evaluate it. They don't even have some of the later additions added in there. So it to me, like that's impossible. Like what are we doing at that point? You know, like everybody's going to have, let me look at Memphis. They're usually the team and they will again, of course they got Doug McDaniel, knew that, but you know, they've got some more high profile guys probably than the rest, at least where they came from. But other than that, like the next team on their list, USF, it's the same kind of thing, right? It's pretty much the same thing. Like it's a lot of players that are trying to step into a bigger role in a bigger conference.
You know, and there were obviously a couple of players that Coach Mills talked about specifically just a few minutes ago. Caron Boyd is one of them, obviously being able to prioritize defense and what he did, what Caron Boyd did in that conference a year ago, I think is, you know, definitely something that can translate, can travel from one program to the next. And so I would anticipate, even in a situation where it's so hard to set expectations, I think from a defensive point of view, you can set expectations that Caron Boyd will be a really good, if not great, defender for Wichita State. I think that sort of thing can translate from program to program. It's really hard on the other side of the ball to be able to set expectations and say, yeah, on paper, they're 7% better in shooting than they were a season ago. How does that translate, though, when push comes to shove and you're actually in the middle of the game? That's really hard to set expectations for, but defense does travel. And so I do think that that's one area where we can probably set a little bit of an expectation that Caron Boyd can be somebody that can be a difference maker defensively. He called out Will Berg, and that was interesting to me. Like, I haven't heard, I mean, obviously he, you know, had a reserve role with Purdue. He's got a ton of size and all of that. I was really curious to know how the five position would pan out when we start the season for Wichita State. And Coach Mills didn't allude to, you know, whether or not Will Berg's going to be the starting center or what that looks like for them. But the fact that, you know, he's got experience in Big Ten basketball and all of that, you know, I think from a size perspective and a rim protecting perspective, that was an important mention as well.
Yeah, it's going to be, and that's why we didn't get into a lot of the specific players, honestly. Because it's like, what are you going to say? Like, you don't know yet. You haven't had a chance to really work them out. I will say, speaking of Caron Boyd, it helps when he came to Coke Arena and scored 16 points and had a nice game for East Tennessee, and you got to see him up close and personal. I'm sure that is why, and contributed to why that's first call. Like, any nugget you can get in the world, it's got to be valuable. Like, we saw this guy. Like, we liked what he did on tape. Let's, you know, that becomes an easier call to make. It's tough. It's tough out there. I don't know. I have to do a good job this year of refocusing the way that we talk about like what we're seeing on the court, because we've never seen an off season across basketball, not just at Wichita State, like this. Almost everybody is dealing with this sort of turnover this year. How do we then take that and use it to try and like understand progress? It's going to be different, I think, this year than it ever has been, honestly. And so everybody's going to have to adjust. Fans, us, players, coaches, like we all have to make a quick adjustment here on what this might look like. How many years does it look like this? I think that's the million-dollar question. Like, is it this for a while? Is it this for a short term? What does revenue share do to help that? Those are the things that make it an unpredictable year. It really could be. Like, Tommy, we could deal with this kind of crazy offseason this time only. I don't know if things can move that fast, but you have like the president of the United States lending an ear to former football coaches who are senators now and Nick Saban, like trying to maybe come up with some solutions. So I don't want to say it's going to take a long time when maybe it's not going to take a long time. I mean, who the hell knows, right? Like we're just all kind of buckled up for the ride, but it will be this year. We know we're going to have to look at it maybe under a different lens than we ever have before.
Yeah. I think that, you know, at the end of the day, it's making sure that you've got enough pieces that are versatile enough to basically build the identity that you're looking for with this team. And I think that Coach Mills, has been very open and transparent since day one on what he values in a basketball player. And he even said it in the interview, you know, about a lot of guys out there that like basketball, but who loves basketball. The default answer from some guys, like, I play because I'm tall, I play because I'm fast, whatever that is. But what's that next step? And so, you know, some of those intangibles where we don't know, we're not in the gym with them, we're not in the weight room with them, we don't know how that all pans out. At the end of the day, all we can go off of is what a lot of these players did at their previous stop. But it's the matter of all the ingredients coming together and having the right coach, having the right, you know, for lack of a better term, baker, if we're using a cooking analogy here, to make all those ingredients come together to bake the right cake. And, you know, that's really what the question mark is going into this year. All the pieces, it seems, are there. We were wondering about that when you had guys like Ballard and Washington transfer out, and you had all the other, you know, contributors basically use up their eligibility, graduate, move on, all of that. What do those ingredients look like, and can it be brought together to make a successful team? I think the pieces are there. Now the question mark is, how do they gel? How do they come together?
Yeah, I mean, we think the pieces are there, right? We didn't know anything about any of these guys until a month ago, or what, we let 2 months now. That's the other thing I think we have to be fair about too, is we didn't know who these guys, we still don't. Like, we know the names, I can look up their stats and say, oh, this guy at, you know, whatever, scored 7.8 points a game and shot, like, yeah, we got to get him in and get a look, and we will soon. What did he say? June 2nd, early
June.
Yeah,
June 2nd.
So it's coming quick. It's coming quick, and we'll get a look, and we're going to get a look with K-State, and we're going to get a look with KU, and it all will come together. And hell, in 5 months, we're going to have some basketball to play, and that's what we're all looking forward to. It's going to be fun. I'm excited about it. Like today, when I saw that he was out talking about the players today, it fired me up a little bit, Tommy, because it's like, okay, like now we got a chance. Because otherwise, like, they can't talk. So we're trying to put it together. We're trying to guess. We're trying to do all this stuff. Well, yeah, no, now we get a chance to hear what it is about. And one thing that I appreciate else about that conversation is there was never a moment of, at least that I took, any sort of like pity, self-pity or desire for it. For how difficult this process is now, because make no mistake, it is insanely difficult for them to be a part of. Nope, not one time. And because what good does that do, right? And you hear some of the older coaches that have been around a long time, they complain about it all the time. And I'm like, guys, like, what? Okay, you don't like it, but that's what we're doing here.
It's now. Reality. So, like, it's just the reality of the situation.
Who cares if you don't like it or like it? Like, you got that's the environment you have to work in. We all do that every day. Like, yeah, go. And so I thought that was good too. Just roll up your sleeves. The Portal Paul moniker, that has been one of my favorite things of the offseason. And they did some work, and maybe they have a little bit more work to do. You can go back and listen to that interview right now on the Odyssey. Well, not right now. Give us a minute. But later today on the Odyssey app. And then again, in the 9 o'clock hour, you'll hear it again as well. We've got Felix Johnson coming up next hour, so make sure you're here for that. We will get you ready for the Royals. We'll dig into the Royals game last night If you missed the big hit, like most of us, I thought it was just me. Apparently it wasn't, as I looked this morning. Vinny Pasquantino's home run came while there was a glitch in the broadcast. I'm telling you. I'll tell you about that when we come back, Tommy, because it was annoying. I thought it was just me. Apparently it wasn't, which is kind of funny. We'll come back. Another hour of Sports Daily coming your way. Don't go away.
Now, from Wichita's most listened to sports radio, 97.5 and 1240 KFH, this is Sports Daily with Jacob Albrock and Tommy Gester.
All right, welcome back in, everybody. It is Sports Daily. Jacob Albrock, Tommy Gester here with you, ready to rock and roll on this Tuesday. We spent a lot of time there in the first hour talking college basketball. That's because we have Paul Mills in with us, Wichita State head men's basketball coach, to chat about the Shocker offseason. Tommy, let's continue the conversation about the Royals. We got into this briefly right off the top of the show. So last night, I didn't realize this until this last commercial break or something. I thought I was the only one. So in that, you know, in that late in the game, in that eighth inning, when the Royals were up, there was a message that just said technical difficulty. And then we came back and they were up 2-0. And I'm like, well, what happened in the Bobby Witt Jr. at bat, which is where it left off sort of. And then all of a sudden, then we got a replay and I was like, oh, Vinny hit a home run. Well, that was unfortunate timing that I missed that, because you sit here and you watch for, you know, 2 hours waiting for something to happen. And then I realized, I think it was across the board. So that kind of sucks. For everybody.
Yeah, can I just say, I mean, this is nothing against the broadcasters. I think they're fine. I mean, I think Rex Hudler's a lot of fun, and I like Ryan LaFever and the entire crew there. But the production quality just, I mean, come on. Like, it's not good. It's not consistently, it's not, like, there are minor league broadcasts that I feel like are better than the Royals major league TV broadcast. And that's been that way for a long time. Like, you've got technical issues, and there have been audio issues in the past. And like, I get it. Like, we work in broadcasting and it's hard to be perfect. It's hard to like not have glitches here and there and not have things. We've had glitches on this show. Like, it happens periodically, but man, come on. Like things like that, especially when like we're desperately waiting for the Royals to score runs. And then the minute that they do, the broadcast goes down. That's tough. Like, that's rough to happen.
Yeah, it's 100% has nothing to do with the Royals cruise.
No, no, no.
It has
not
everything
at all
to do with Bally Sports and now right. FanDuel. Like, they're not – baseball has a problem in general. There just isn't any reason anymore that – it is so difficult to find games when there are 162 of them. Like, I get logged out of that app all the time. I'm like, what? Like, it should not take me 15 minutes to get the game turned off.
Did you know, I don't know if you have experienced this, but like, you know, you and I watch these games on the FanDuel sports app, because again, we're blacked out in Wichita, which is ridiculous, but it is what it is. So we're watching it on the app. If you watch the pregame show, it doesn't roll right into the actual broadcast. You have to stop the pregame, and then you have to like click again to watch the actual game. It's like, it's ridiculous.
They couldn't make it more difficult to watch the product, and it's annoying. And I know it's like, I get it. Baseball they don't have like one partner in all of this. I understand that, and I understand why, and I understand the regional component of it is important to what it is that they've had to do over the years. But at some point, figure it out.
We had a game a couple of weeks ago where I believe it was Ryan LaFever and Rex Hudler, I think it was those two guys, did like two or three innings on their cell phone. Like, you had the video, but the audio portion, they literally called in on their phone and they were broadcasting the game. Like, what are we doing here, fellas?
Yeah, it's something. But it's going to be this year, right? We're not We're not getting a change this year, but I do think changes are coming. I wonder if teams could handle this stuff themselves and not outsource it. I think you've said like the Rangers are doing that this year. It's the Rangers Sports Network. I don't know. Like, you'd have more of a depth of knowledge on like how difficult that would be to then have to also get that stuff sold. And like, there's a lot that goes into it. I understand that. But Major League Baseball, make your product easier to find. Just if you want to do the MLB app, which is a great app, don't black it out. Maybe that's a place to start. But even then, somebody still has to broadcast the game. It's not like Major League Baseball doing the broadcast. So I don't know what the ultimate solution is, but baseball should make it a little easier to find baseball. All that aside, Vinny Pasquantino gets the big hit. I'm glad that it was him that got it. I'm very glad, honestly, that it was him that got it, because they need him to find the form he found. I don't remember. Maybe you do, Tommy. How long did his slump to start the season last a year ago? I don't think it was this long. And it totally changed the team when he found his groove last year. I really, really hope that something like that can happen again, because it will change the dynamic of this team completely. It will. And now, a part of that last year was that Salvi was great, right? Like, he was fine. He's not either. But Vinny, every time, like, he's shown like just a couple of times this year, like, okay, he's like, he's back. And then it's not. And then it is. And, you know, last year, once he hit that stride, he never looked back until he got hurt. But they were one, you know, they became one of the better offensive teams in baseball, most efficient anyway. And his turnaround was pretty much the catalyst directly of that happening. Maybe it can happen again. It's just taking longer this time. And it was good to see last night.
Yeah. I mean, look, like, he had, he was able to get his average all the way up to above 260 last year when everything was said and done. You know, of course, he had, that injury last year, that kept him out for the, you know, ending part of the regular season. But I mean, I do know that he basically was able to get that average, get that entire slash line up. I honestly don't remember. I'd have to go back and look. I'd have to, you know, go back and look up when he was able to finally turn things around. I know it took a while, like, to get out of the gate last year. I don't remember exactly when that was.
Yeah, I don't think it took till May 20th, because then he hit a stride where he was like one of the top RBI guys before his injury. And I just don't know that there would have been enough time for that, after that point. So either way, that would be, honestly, like, of all the things that could impact this offense in a positive way, that's probably the most impactful thing that could happen before like a CAGS call up, which at earliest probably won't happen until late next month. And that's a pipe dream. That's even that's probably unlikely. So we'll watch him. I mean, you know, there was some emotion in that swing last night. I don't know if you've seen the clip of it yet, but like, that felt like the weight off your shoulders kind of a swing. So maybe that can be it for the team. Didn't matter. Chris Bubich was incredible. The bullpen was good enough. I don't want to say it was incredible, but it was good enough. They, you know, Schreiber did a really nice job of bailing out Daniel Lynch a little bit. Estevez was good. He did have one hit allowed, which is kind of his thing, but he got the job done. And now they can, I honestly, and I don't know if we said this yesterday, but I certainly thought it. It was kind of important to me that they got that win with Bubich, because the pitching that they'll face in this series is brutal. And we still don't know, I don't think, what's going to happen on Wednesday, but at least now, you know, you've got at least a game in the series. Now you can relax a little bit. Had they lost that one last night in a game where Bubich pitched like that, I think it would have felt like a tall mountain to climb with the starting pitching that they're going to face in this series.
Yeah, I mean, they get Hayden Birdsong tonight against Michael Lorenzen, and Lorenzen has been solid this entire season so far. You know, his ERA is under 4, which is good. He's been, you know, probably exceeding expectations as your number 5 starter in the rotation. You know, he's not been elite like Bubich has been, but he's been good. And so I think that you've got a good opportunity here to take the first two games of the series. I don't think that, you know, traditionally you look at your number 5 starter and you're like, okay, well, this might be, you know, a tough ask, a difficult, you know, scenario for them to get a victory. But I do think that Lorenzen has exceeded those expectations. And I think they've got a good chance in tonight's game if they can give him some run support. And then, yeah, tomorrow, the finale, the afternoon game in San Francisco, we still don't know who's going to start that game for the Royals. I would venture to guess it's probably going to be a bullpen game. You know, it wouldn't surprise me. And the fact that Daniel Lynch pitched an inning yesterday, I don't think he's going to be the starter tomorrow. So I don't exactly know. And I've got kind of a couple guesses on what I think they'll do in tomorrow's finale, but they've not announced anything yet.
Yeah, it's not. I mean, it's not tremendous.
It'll be a challenge. I mean, Logan Webb is on the bump, and he's been really good this year.
That's what I meant. So that's the thing for me. Like, Bubic, yeah, you get through that, and then it's okay. Like, you know you're going to have a tough pitching matchup. And then it was that, yeah, you have to go up against Logan Webb with a who knows what's going to happen. That's why it felt like last night was pretty important to get a win. They'll play again late tonight. You'll hear it on KFH. Pregame coverage starts at 8:30. No issues getting Shockers and Royals in because Shockers open the AAC tournament in the afternoon. I think that pregame coverage, I believe, begins at 2:45. Mike Kennedy on the call as the Shockers are out in Florida taking on the conference pitcher of the year for Charlotte. That'll be a challenge. I'll tell you this. It's as excited about Wichita State baseball as I've been in 2 months because they're heating up and it's the conference tournament. And why not, right? They showed us a year ago they can do it.
Yeah, you got to go for broke right now. Like, you're playing with house money. You've under-delivered this regular season. Just let it ride. Let it ride here.
That can be advantageous. We know that. I mean, what do they have to lose, right? Like, nothing. And so, just take that into the tournament. Let's see what happens. All right, we'll come back. Felix Johnson, Chiefs insider, will be in to talk Chiefs and really anything else that's on our brain with the NFL. Don't go away.
This season, let your shoes do the talking. Designer Shoe Warehouse is packed with fresh styles that speak to your whole vibe, without saying a word. From cool sneakers that look good with everything, to easy sandals you'll want to wear on repeat, ESW has you covered. Find a shoe for every you, from the brands you love, like Birkenstock, Nike, Adidas, New Balance, and more. Head to your DSW store or visit DSW.com today.
Keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. And you get a free Samsung 5G phone when you bring your number. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
Question for our listeners. Which automaker assembles the most vehicles in the country? Here's a hint. It's the same one that employs the most hourly workers in the country, and the answer is Ford. That's not a coincidence. It's a commitment. A commitment your local Ford stores share. And that is why Ford is now offering employee pricing across their full lineup of vehicles, which means you pay what they pay. So visit your local Ford stores today to take advantage of this great opportunity. Ford Motor Company. From America for America.
In Indiana, summer means more than sunshine. It's hiking miles and miles of trails to magnificent views and cruising through caves on underground river rides. It's spending the night in a floating cabin and scuba diving into your next big adventure. It's riding a horse and buggy through historic towns and camping with elephants at a wildlife park. It's anything but ordinary. Plan your trip at inindiana.com/summer.
Okay, take it easy. We're going on the air.
This is Sports Daily on KFH.
And now, digging deeper with the teams you follow, it's another Sports Daily Insider interview on KFH.
All right, welcome back. Felix Johnson is in, our Chiefs insider. This time of year, just sort of our football insider, I think, as much as anything else. Felix with Arrowhead Addict, Talk Ball podcast now, I'm seeing. You've been sending me some of those clips. You got something going and cooking there, Felix. It's a time of the year where we can all do some things, right? This is, if there is a calm in the NFL schedule, which isn't much, this is it, right? This time between draft to OTA, like we're kind of in that zone of evaluation and really digging in deep, which I know you're doing a lot of that in the various places that you're contributing. But this is the slow time for the NFL. Let's be real.
Well, and even then, the Packers are trying to ban the tush push, which could be major for, excuse me, the Super Bowl champions that basically rode themselves for the last 2 or 3 years all the way to a championship. And I guess you could say their success over the last couple of years has been based around that play. And I mean, the NFL is just going to stay in our mouths because Roger Goodell's making $60 million a year. And that's how he does it, by staying relevant. So.
Let's talk about that tush push a little bit here, Felix. I mean, it definitely seems like there's momentum on this. And I know the Packers have revised what the language says in there that basically will prohibit anybody from pushing or pulling a running back to do anything other than just individually blocking for that player. It definitely seems like this does have legs. Do you feel like by the time we get to week one of the regular season, will we not have the tush push be allowed anymore?
I think particularly with being that it's the Packers, an NFC team that has lost to the Eagles a couple times, like even most recently as this past postseason, it does kind of feel like sore losers coming after the Eagles for all the reasons that I just said. But at the same time, it does for the Frankie Louvu goal line stand in the NFC Championship game. That's the reason why the play is kind of weird, because the defense doesn't really have any recourse other than standing at the goal line and going off sides like Frankie Louvu did. Now, if there weren't teams like the Bills in the AFC Championship game who continually did it wrong, particularly just because Josh Allen kept false stepping by taking a half a step backwards instead of just moving forward like Jalen Hurts does, because no matter how strong you are, the momentum has to move forward. Josh Allen was moving his backwards. That's the difference in the play. The Patriots with Mac Jones couldn't figure it out when he was still their starter. So there are teams that can't figure it out. So that's why I think it's fair, I guess, being that there are some offenses that can't figure it out, but defenses don't really have a chance to figure it out at all. So that's why it's an undefeatable play. And so you start your drives at first and eight. And so that is a huge thing in a game of inches. 2 yards can become massive, like we've seen multiple times in the AFC Championship game for the Kansas City Chiefs.
They don't have to make any excuses. Roger Goodell doesn't have to make any. They don't have to say injury. The play sucks. Nobody likes the play. It's boring to watch. It changes the way it changes an exciting component of the game, yeah, which are short yardage situations. Just get rid of it. Like, the NFL is a league that doesn't, they change the rules all the time to make, yeah, the product on the field. It's like baseball is where we have to make excuses. Why do we ban the shift? Because the shift sucks and it makes, yeah, the game worse. So just get rid of it. The tush push sucks. Like, it's not fun to watch. Get rid of it. Who cares?
I think it's kind of one of those things, kind of like a field goal kick. Like, what? That's the go get another beer, go get some chips time. Like, oh, my team just scored. Doesn't matter. It's kind of like one of those things where it's like, yeah, oh, the Eagles, it's third and inches. I'm going to go be right back real quick. They'll get the first down and whatever the case may be. So I think you're right in that it does kind of slow down the game pace when we're sitting here 4.5 hours at a time every Sunday. So it is one of those things where it's just like, why are we doing this? And then it was like the offense came up with this unstoppable play, and then Frankie Louvu came up, and I guess the Commanders and Dan Quinn, whatever the concoction came up with there, they came up with something like, now what? Like, what are you going to do? And then I think a lot of the language was, at least the referees from that particular instance, was, we're just going to have to give the Eagles the score, or essentially something like that. And like, my competition athlete brain, and I think a lot of people work the way I do, is like, That's not how this works. We don't give people scores in football in the NFL. And so, like, obviously it was a different concept and in different context, but at the same time, it was like, it's such a weird situation that the Eagles have started and they're the only ones that have mastered it. And that's why it's become such a polarizing issue.
Well, changing gears a little bit, Felix, we just got word a little while ago that the Bears and Joe Tooney have agreed to a 2-year extension, $17.5 million a year. That's $51 million for the next 3 years, 33.5 of it fully guaranteed at signing. At first glance for me, my takeaway is that the Bears have done a masterful job in rebuilding that offensive line for Caleb Williams going into this season, and having an anchor and a veteran like Joe Tooney, that's so important for what they're trying to do. And they're able to get a deal done that keeps him in Chicago long term.
Yeah, Cody and I were talking about this on the very first episode of Let's Talk Ball, as one of our winners from the offseason was the Chicago Bears. They get Ben Johnson, they bring in Dennis Allen as their defensive coordinator. And then I think the biggest part of it, as a former offensive lineman, I want to see offensive lines get built up, and that's how you protect your quarterback, obviously. Caleb Williams' biggest comp coming into the league was Patrick Mahomes. What have the Chiefs done over the last 5 years in lieu of not having great tackles? Get your interior offensive line very, very solid. They drafted Creed Humphrey. They got lucky with Trey Smith. They signed Joe Tooney. Well, the Bears are taking literally the exact same page out of the Chiefs playbook. Go get Joe Tooney. They bring in a Chiefs executive who was there for some of that building process. So the Bears rebuilt their interior offensive line for who they expect to be their quarterback of the future, their franchise cornerstone. And the exact same way that his comp did it just a couple years ago. And so if Ben Johnson can fit into that Andy Reid offensive genius type, if Dennis Allen can fit into that Steve Spagnuolo fired head coach that works better as a defensive coordinator type, then the Bears could be cooking with some peanut oil, if you will.
Yeah, I agree. And it's funny, we see the stuff about Caleb Williams maybe trying to not end up there. And I get why. I think we all do. Mm-hmm. But now the situation went from, man, I really don't want to be there, to kind of perfect. No mm-hmm. more excuses. You got the coach. They gave you the line. They're doing everything now the right way. And I know that you're a Caleb Williams guy, as am I. And I think it's going to lead to some success for him. I do.
Well, I think the hardest, my most, and it kind of goes with the Shadur conversation, is like, he only wants things to be catered to him. And it's like, in the NFL as a quarterback, yeah, that's kind of how things go. And particularly if you're the number one overall pick, yes, like, you're going to have things catered to you, and that's how things should go. And we've seen it, especially in today's NFL, that's how teams win in the NFL. You have to kind of cater around your quarterback. And obviously, if you need to fix your defense here and do whatever you need to wherever else, do that. But if Andy Reid isn't there for Patrick Mahomes specifically, and they don't build that interior offensive line, they don't have Travis Kelce, obviously he's there beforehand, but they don't manage the Kansas City Chiefs around what Patrick Mahomes needs and probably wants, they're not going to be as successful. And I think that's the blueprint for the league, and the Bears were just going to have to fall into that model, and they did it a year late.
Yeah, he's a story to watch. There's all kinds of stories to watch this year, mm-hmm. Tommy. I mean, they're everywhere.
Well, yeah, and Felix, you wrote an article that just came down on Arrowhead Addict that you sent to us about kind of putting what the Chiefs are in their dynasty in the perspective of professional wrestling. And I know Jacob appreciates that for sure. But the heel turn that we've seen this dynasty now, kind of maybe going back the other direction a little bit. Where do you see that headed, and why do you think that's shifting?
You know, I think it's kind of branching towards the other way. Obviously, the Chiefs have been the big bad in the NFL for the last however many years, going to 3 straight Super Bowls and taking the Patriots' place. And the Eagles, kind of, whether it be, and the way I described it in the article, is kind of this barstool culture, if you will, this kind of bro-ish culture that Nick Sirianni, who just got a contract extension, they kind of fit into that kind of category. And they knocked off the Patriots too, so they're kind of like the back-to-back underdog champions of the world, if you will. And so I think that the Chiefs are kind of heading into that underdog territory. And then it's like you guys were talking about earlier, it's May, where I'm just kind of pulling, as a football writer, I'm looking for stuff. There was a TikTok trend over the last couple of weeks where some people were comparing Patrick Mahomes' voice, everybody knows what it sounds like, to that of the voice on the party track from if you've been to a wedding, The Wobble. It sounds exactly like, if you line them up, you see a picture of Patrick Mahomes, you listen to the song, it just lines up perfectly. And I think people were kind of making fun of Patrick Mahomes, but not necessarily in the vitriolic way that it had been over the last couple of years. And obviously Mahomes has talked in interviews like, my voice is what it is. We all know what it is. And so it was kind of like, we're all making fun of the guy as opposed to the quarterback for the greatness and all that good stuff. So I think that it's kind of turning back like, oh yeah, Patrick Mahomes is still just a guy with a goofy voice who happens to be a great quarterback. Let's see if they can win another Super Bowl again. But again, they're the Chiefs. They've won two out of the last three Super Bowls. It's probably not going down that way.
By the way, I don't know if you knew this, but did you know that Jacob is actually a pro at the Wobble? He loves doing that dance.
I'll take my semi-pro abilities over his.
You know, it's not so much that I'm a pro at wobbling at the end of a wedding party.
That's what it is. Okay. Yeah, that makes more sense.
Get a little wobbly. I'll contend till the day I die. There are no better parties than a wedding reception. Best parties. You don't even have to know anybody. What was that movie, Wedding Crashers? Like, you don't even have to know anybody. If you're at a wedding reception, you are a wedding reception with proper lubrication, you are guaranteed to have a good time. I think that they're the best. I don't know that the Chiefs are going to be the good guy. It's you want a wrestling reference. It's kind of like the mid years of John Cena, like when the NFL's trying to make them like they're just people have Chiefs fatigue. They're going to have it again this year. They're going to be in primetime. People are going to see that they're in primetime. They're going to think they get all the calls. They're going to complain about the 9 seconds of Taylor Swift they might see in a broadcast, like whatever it is. Like they may want them to be. And I've always thought this was interesting. Tom Brady was not likable, right? Like he wasn't. Right. Patrick Mahomes is as likable an athlete as we've ever had before. Well, but it comes with the success. Like I don't think it's going to happen.
I think some of that is because they've been boring to watch. Like they've been scoring 20 points a game for the last couple years. And let's say they go back to scoring 35 points a game this year, then it'll be like, oh yeah, they're a lot more fun to watch. And just
I agree with that.
People are going to jump onto that bandwagon. Now, more likely than not, you're right. But at the same time, I'm kind of hoping that they kind of turn the corner of like, oh, they're more fun to watch. So people are just more joyous when the Chiefs are brought up, I guess.
I want to kind of shift gears again a little bit. So Fred Warner signs a deal with the 49ers to become the league's highest paid linebacker. Of course, we know Brock Purdy signed a deal with the Niners as well. We've seen the Niners in recent days start throwing out a lot of money on both sides of the ball. What's your takeaway from both of those deals?
I think Kyle Shanahan and John Lynch have officially realized they're on the clock. With Brock Purdy, they kind of benefited from Trey Lance not working out and obviously Mr. Irrelevant working out. Now that they've chosen to extend this guy and move forward with him as their quarterback, this is it. And obviously they've had a lot of success in the past, and some of that is due to Brock Purdy, but now even more of it is on Brock Purdy's shoulders. You're on the clock now. This is your guy. I compare Brock Purdy a lot to Tua and what he's done, where he's just kind of fine, and he's more of what the pieces around him, and he's just had more than Tua has had around him, even though Tyreek Hill has probably been the best single receiver over the last 3 years. The 49ers have probably had the best roster, like they did in 2019 with Jimmy Garoppolo. And how do we feel about Jimmy Garoppolo? Now I think Brock Purdy's better than Jimmy Garoppolo, but at the same time, we saw last year when Chris McCaffrey went down, when Deebo Samuel was in and out of the lineup, when Brandon Ayuk goes down, when Trent Williams, he's nearly 40 years old, still playing left tackle. Without all of these different guys, I believe the number is Brock Purdy's like 7-13 or something like that, without at least one of those guys. So I can't imagine what it's going to look like when Deebo's gone for sure. Brandon Ayuk's coming off of the injury, CMC, another injury in his career. So like, what are we doing if you're the 49ers? You're on the clock now. You might lose your job in a year and a half, but it's Kyle Shanahan. They'll probably figure something out and they'll probably make the playoffs.
Yeah, it's interesting. Just one more maybe on Purdy before we let you go. I thought the deal was just about perfect, right? Like it's kind of where he ranks. He didn't need to get over some of the names that are the highest paid. He needed to get paid. He's certainly proven that. So he kind of slots into the top of the middle of the pack of the quarterbacks that have been paid. Right. And that feels about right.
Well, if he doesn't play like he did just this past season, sure. they can't be average. He can't be average if he's going to be paid like a top 10, top 7 or 8 quarterback. He has to play like he did 2 years ago.
Right. I agree with that. And whether he will or not, I'm not sure what I think about that yet. Mm-hmm. He's an interesting player. Like Dak got paid. Dak got paid too much, but we know Dak's good. You know, like that. That's not the question for Dak. It's, is he good enough? But we know he's good. I don't know if we know Brock Purdy's good. Felix, what are you working on this week here, and where can we find it?
I've got that Arrowhead Addict article that you guys just mentioned.
Well, you got some Dak smoke? What's going on?
No, I was talking about Brock Purdy. He's not that good. Dak, I like Dak. Dak's good.
I know you like
him. I got some Arrowhead Addict stuff coming out, and I'll be working on from there mostly from now on. So, yeah.
And you can check out the Pro Wrestling Chiefs, Are They in a Face Turn article right now. Just go follow Felix at Felix R. Johnson, and you'll find it right there. Nice and easy to find. Felix, we appreciate it.
Appreciate you guys.
There goes Felix Johnson. That's an interesting idea. Boy, I don't know that I don't know what it would take. It's going to take a reset for the Chiefs to ever get back into favor. They'll be a favorite again in 5 years. Like when, you know, as time goes on and, you know, I would assume Mahomes is sort of the last man standing of this current era, which he almost certainly will be. And Travis Kelce and Chris Jones and probably Andy Reid are done and Mahomes is still going. I think at that point, probably they'll become lovable again, like they were 5 years ago now. But it's going to take some time. I just think people are there for whatever. And it's because they're successful. I get it. But the Eagles are a far more unlikable team as a neutral observer.
Yeah,
but that's not the way most people. That's not the way most people feel, though.
I think the other thing too is that you've got there was a period of time where the Chiefs, especially even Mahomes and Kelce, were kind of openly embracing the hate. Like they were feeding off of it, and it was that chip on their shoulder kind of thing. I didn't really see a whole lot of that last year, and I haven't seen any of that, you know, throughout the course of this offseason. If nothing else, I think kind of knowing that this might be the swan song for Travis Kelce, I think kind of puts him back in more of a, you know, a little bit of a positive light and retrospective and appreciative and, you know, all of that. And so I do think that that plays into it.
Potentially big news yesterday, Tommy, that I think kind of went under the radar, to be quite honest with you, in the NCAA with the House versus NCAA settlement coming in. Did you see this from Pete Thamel on ESPN about a CEO of college sports? So this is what I mean. I didn't see this until honestly just a little bit ago, kind of skimming through, making sure we didn't miss anything. So let me just kind of read for you here what is happening. So this is according to Thamel, ESPN, great reporter. So he says that with it expected this week, a part of the resolution will include a new enforcement organization and a CEO to oversee college athletics. So the NCAA would relinquish the authority to punish universities, programs, players, all those things. That would go to an entity called the College Sports Commission, which a lot of people have pined for a long time, right? Let go of that NCAA. And then Thamel also reports that the CEO of that commission could be announced as soon as the House settlement goes final, which I guess could come quick. That person would be sort of appointed by the Power Four commissioners. So I think what you're seeing is kind of an NFL model, right? You're handing that power to an appointed individual like Roger Goodell to oversee this. That seems daunting. I will be honest. I like the idea of it. I don't know how different it is than the current way of things with the NCAA. Like that, I mean, the NCAA is a university appointed body that like governs the sport. So basically you're changing the name of it and you're going to give it a CEO. But on one side, I like the idea of a singular entity. As much as people like to dog on Roger Goodell, I do think it's good when you have pro sports commissioners where it's like the buck stops here, right? Like we're finding resolution right now. If you've got a problem with the NCAA, who do you even look to? It's sort of like this ethereal, you know, body of something that like whatever. So I do like that. I like that. But at the same time, Roger Goodell has to manage and oversee 32 teams, right? What is the CEO really going to singularly govern and punish? What are we looking
well,
at?
And who does Roger Goodell report to? The owners. The owners of each individual 32 teams.
Some capacities, yes.
Right.
Yes.
So, well, I mean, they're the ones that are approving whether or not he's going to get a pay raise or
but
if they give him a vote of confidence.
Off the owners plenty.
He does. Like he does. You know what I mean? But there are checks and balances. There is accountability in some way, shape, or form. That's been the biggest knock on the NCAA forever, is there are no checks and balances. They've gotten to run roughshod over college athletics for decades. And I would argue, I've said this for a long time, college sports commission, a CEO, whatever, like that's all well and good. The NCAA, outside of putting on tournaments, is completely irrelevant and completely useless, in my opinion. Like, I don't think that they serve any kind of purpose other than being self-serving and to try to do everything that they can to stay relevant and to show that they are meaningful in the world of college athletics when college athletics has clearly passed that entity by. And so, I mean, outside of what putting on the NCAA tournament in basketball, putting on, you know, even like the CFP is a completely separate entity from the NCAA. Like, what kind of relevancy does that governing body even have anymore?
Well, yeah, I don't. I sometimes just like an on the surface change that doesn't actually change anything can still be beneficial, right? We see this all the time. I don't think it would just be a surface change, though. I think you could really lay out some. Nick Saban is the name that gets brought up a lot in this. But Thamel is saying it's expected to be somebody totally outside the college athletics universe right now, not a household name. I think when Saban gets brought up, it's as a like a college football specific person. And that's the other thing. Does this CEO oversee all sports? Are they going to have different CEOs for different sports? I don't think we know that totally yet, but I think Thamel's pretty clear. And like the expectation is not for it to be somebody like Nick Saban. Nick Saban would honestly probably be okay at it. I don't know that I believe that Alabama always played by the rules. I don't, but and that's not a knock on him. I don't think anybody did at that level, right? The actual rules. So I don't know if that's a good or a bad thing, because it could be a good thing for somebody to understand there needs to be a little nuance in it, right? And but right now it's the Wild West, so. The one positive maybe in the Wild West right now is that there's pretty universal agreement that nobody likes it. And when that happens, I do think it probably makes it easier to find some guidance in making some rules and things. What I'm curious about, though, is when the settlement comes down, how much authority would this group or this CEO have to set the rules? Like that we still don't know, like who makes the rules. It, like what rules are we going to live by with the transfer portal, with NIL? Like what does that look like and who makes those rules? We've been led to believe for a while that it was going to have to be federally legislated because different states have different laws. Could this governing body, if it's appointed by the Power Four, just kind of make the rules? That's what happens in the NFL. We're talking about it with the tush push, right? That goes through the channels and, you know, they're trying to get the league itself to change the rules. Does this governing body or this CEO have that sort of legal authority to do things like that when things aren't collectively bargained? I don't think they do, unless something in the total structure. That's where I'm a little confused by all this. It's fine if you want to have a figurehead. I think that's probably a good idea at the end of the day. How much power does this person actually have legally?
I mean this completely honestly, and I'm not trying to knock him. I genuinely am curious. What in the world does Charlie Baker do? Like, you know, he's the head of the NCAA. Like, don't you think that this should be something that if the NCAA could get out of its own damn way, that they could do this? Like, that's why they're here. But they've shown time in and time out that they cannot do that because they care about themselves and that's it.
It's going to be a name change, but that's my fear. That's what I meant like earlier. How much actually changes versus what we already have, which is a governing body and a head of it, which they have. Charlie Baker is the head of the NCAA. But I also think if they can let the NCAA do the things that the NCAA is very good at, organizing events, right, handling how you get a massive tournament to 9 different cities and like navigating the all of that stuff, and then separately have like not even necessarily an enforcement agency, but like the game, like organize the games, and then what's actually happening on the field are maybe 2 different areas. I don't think that's a bad thing. And again, it could mean nothing. It could be one of those things where you just put a sticker on top of something that's already crappy. I don't know. But it's interesting to see it. But yeah, we already have this. Maybe now, though, it's taking some off the plate of the NCAA, giving it somewhere else in order to have it more effective. I think one of the fundamental problems with the NCAA, Tommy, is they just like they can't handle the workload. And that's not a knock on the NCAA. The workload is, I mean, nobody could. It's unmanageable because it's just so open. Like there are no real sets of rules. And even when we had them, nobody was following them. And now legally standing, those rules were illegal.
Well, and every nobody's rule
really following.
Every them. Rule was arbitrary and every rule was, not enforced equally.
You're not allowed to pay the players, but everybody was paying the players. Right.
Or it was like, really minuscule, tiny little things where it was like the letter of the law was being enforced and not the spirit of the law. Where you had like a player that was getting a cheeseburger, right? Like, wasn't that the Jim Harbaugh situation? Like Jim Harbaugh bought him a cheeseburger, whatever that story was. And it was like this huge NCAA violation, but yet you've got like bagmen from Adidas that are delivering bags of cash, and like that sort of thing just completely flew under the radar forever. So like it was the letter of the law, not the spirit of the law, that was being enforced. It wasn't equitable, it wasn't appropriate, and you had the NCAA coming down with an iron fist when they were involved in it. Like, even remember like a couple of years ago, the NCAA themselves, and it might have been a workload thing. I don't exactly know the reasons why. I don't remember why. But remember, there was even like they had to outsource the decision making on punishments to a third party for a while to like arbitrate and hear these different cases and whatever. Like, it was the independent counsel that heard all the. It was just like, why do we have you? Like, you as a governing body, completely worthless.
Yes, one of the biggest problems is the rules were not right. They weren't correct. And yes, it was like a self-sustaining mechanism for them to get into the weeds when everyone's like, why do you care so much? Like, again, I went to a Division II school where a coach, a legendary coach, was, and this wasn't even an NCAA thing, but it was like under the guise of it, was fired because he was reimbursed for the ticket that he got for a player to go watch a baseball game while they were at the conference meetings. Like, why are we even having the conversation whether that's legal
who
or
cares?
Not? Like, who cares? No, literally nobody cares. And what he did wasn't even wrong. It was an okay thing to do, but he panicked. He was like, did I just break a rule? Like, is that not okay for me to like front him the money? Cause he didn't have it at that very moment to come to this base. Like, it was so stupid.
I am a firm believer, by the way, that the whole reason that we are in the situation that we're in right now in college athletics and the way that NIL has exploded and you've got all of this, everything going on over here with compensation for players is directly a result, in my opinion, of the NCAA not evolving with the times and not doing what they should have been doing decades ago. Instead, they wanted to dig their heels in the ground. They wanted to ignore what was going on behind the scenes. And they wanted to focus on really like stupid, inconsequential things that literally nobody cares about.
And there was that. Listen, there was self-preservation involved.
Absolutely, there was.
Like, we don't want to pay the players when anybody. Like, I get it. You're uncomfortable with a young person making that money, but you have to look at it in the lens of the way our society in America works. And that ain't it.
And you know that it's broken enough now where the NCAA for years and years and years and years, they not only, I mean, I would say that their value was in putting on tournaments, but also on top of that, they were really, really good lobbyists. Like, they were great at lobbying for themselves. Yeah. They had politicians in their back pocket for decades. And now you know that things are broken because they don't have those politicians in their pocket anymore. And that's why we see everything going on now the way that it is.
They were a lobbying arm. There's no question about that. And again, self-preservation from the universities, they didn't want to pay the players, right? Like, you could say there are individuals, and I love and respect a lot of them, that, you know, believe in so many fundamental things that make college athletics great. But at the core, if we're looking from a broad view, like, yeah, no, like, the powers that be didn't want players pay. They didn't want to share that piece of the pie. And it doesn't make any sense. That's going to do it for a busy Tuesday here on the program. Good to have a busy May 20th show. You don't get the busy, busy shows like this really until we hit the fall. So that was nice. Thanks for Paul Mills stopping by and chatting for just a little bit. Going to do that again once he has a chance to see these players. So we'll get one scheduled again after that to get his evaluation of the guys. Specifically, thanks to Felix Johnson for stopping by, talking a little football with us as well. Tom will be back here tomorrow. Let's see if the Royals can maybe they can score more than three.
Another late night. I would love to maybe have a couple of runs early in the game and feel like, all right, maybe I can go to sleep and they can hang on.
Yeah, it's like a 7-0 fourth inning lead.
Wonderful.
That would be nice. We appreciate you waking up with us this morning and being with us here this morning. We'll see you tomorrow.
Going up. Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. And you get a free Samsung 5G phone when you bring your number. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
Question for our listeners. Which automaker assembles the most vehicles in the country? Here's a hint. It's the same one that employs the most hourly workers in the country, and the answer is Ford. That's not a coincidence. It's a commitment. A commitment your local Ford stores share. And that is why Ford is now offering employee pricing across their full lineup of vehicles, which means you pay what they pay. So visit your local Ford stores today to take advantage of this great opportunity. Ford Motor Company. From America for America.
In Indiana, summer means more than sunshine. It's hiking miles and miles of trails to magnificent views and cruising through caves on underground river rides. It's spending the night in a floating cabin and scuba diving into your next big adventure. It's riding a horse and buggy through historic towns and camping with elephants at a wildlife park. It's anything but ordinary. Plan your trip at inindiana.com/summer.